impression of Dick Young. Oh, so I make this error, and then I read the paper the next day. Hermansky's out there floundering in left field. He ends up tackling the ball, you know, a funny corner ball. And I was really angry, you know, because I'm going bad. So next day's a day game, and I'm looking for him. And this is in the dugout, just many hours before game starts. And I don't know, you ever been to Dodger dugout where,
you know, they
get the chairs and right. I mean, the bench,
right.
And then you go downstairs, a little alcove there.
Right.
So I'm waiting for him, and I saw him. I was on a bench. I saw him go downstairs, so I rushed right down after him. I call him SOB, and I had him against the wall. And Leo DeRocher witnessed the whole thing. Now he's sitting, Leo, sitting like this, the staircase.
Yeah, I know that little entry.
So he kind of turns his head, and in this weak voice, he says, don't hit him, Gene, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I'm ready to hack him. Who comes down is Hugh Casey.
Yeah.
And he senses what's going on with me and Dick. He grabs me by the shoulder and he says, don't be an ass.
Yeah.
This guy will crucify you. Yeah. You know? But you know what Leo wanted me to do, right?
Oh, sure. No, DeRocher, because DeRocher had been skewered by Young on many occasions, you know.
Sure, everybody.
Roscoe McGowan was a.
Let me clarify this about Dick Young, though. As the years went by, we both mellowed.
Yeah. He's a great writer.
Yes, and we would meet each other at different functions.
Yeah.
And you know, we became real good friends. So.
He never would, as a general rule, I don't think he held grudges or anything.
No. He called his shots the way he saw them.
How about Roscoe McGowan? He was.
Oh, he's a real gentleman. He reminded me of Bert Schott. You know.
He loved to play cards, and I know that he. He used to lose a lot of times. They always used to tease him about his card
play. Is that right?
The ball players did, you know, because, and some of his fellow writers. Another guy that covered the Dodgers was Harold Rosenthal for a brief period.
Oh, sure, yeah.
He lives in New Jersey. He lives in Teaneck, New Jersey.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Is he retired?
We interviewed him, same way I'm interviewing him.
Is he completely retired?
Yes. He does a little, he submits freelance articles to the magazines and things of that nature. But he's not. I'd say he's 75% retired. Of all of the pitchers you faced, who was the toughest for you that you remember in the National League?
Oh, Warren Spahn was tough. I wouldn't see too much of him anyway because they put me out of the line because they knew I couldn't hit him. He just had my number. Another guy was Bob Rush when I played against him. He was in Chicago.
Yeah.
He used to throw bullets.
He was in Indiana.
Well, however, though, I did hit a home run off him with the bases loaded in Chicago.
When you hit those three home runs in the game you were pointing out to me
who
before,
were the pitchers?
Yeah. But you don't even remember. The ball come up looking like a grapefruit, huh?
Jeff Dobernick was one. Yeah. No one ever heard of him.
Yeah. I don't...
Dobernick and... there's a pitcher named Hamner. I think Jeff Hamner. Dobernick and Hamner. Well, anyway...
Yeah.
To clarify the whole thing, the next day those two guys were in the minor leagues.
what umpires do you remember?
Oh, Stewart?
Yeah. I mean, Bill, do you have Stewart? Any incident? Did you have any run-ins with any of the umpires?
Or? No, Jock O'Connell, no, they were carried. Let me tell you a story about you, Bill Stewart. When I was up my first time in 43, I just came up as a rookie because he knew it. I was on second base with no out, and I took about a 3-foot lead, you know, and he'd be behind second base. He'd say, take more than that. He said, take a bigger lead, you know. He's on watch out for you. Was that nice of him?
Yeah, he was an interesting character. You know, he was a hockey coach as well as a referee in the National Hockey League.
Real great person. Is that amazing, an umpire coaching you for second base?
Huh? Well, I imagine some of these conversations between the umpires and the players are, you know, they make a great book someday.
Sure,
if anybody could put them down, because you can watch either on television or in person. You watch. There's always some conversations going on between the batters and the umpires. Did you have a A particular umpire who thought was outstanding in terms of balls and strikes.
Bay Pinella?
Yeah.
And who's a guy like a wrestler? Getz. Yeah. Was it Getz? His last name was Getz. I can't remember.
Larry Getz.
Larry Getz.
That's right.
Jacko's a good umpire.
Were you ever ejected from a ball game?
Jacko threw me out one time.
How did that happen?
St. Louis.
Tell us about that.
The count was 1-1, and the next pitch was almost in the same spot he calls it a strike. I said, Jocko, you made a mistake. They backed out. He said, no, get in there. Next ball, same spot as the first one was a ball. Second one he calls it a strike. Same spot, he calls that a strike. So I stormed out of the boxes. That ball was up here now, you know it.
Yes.
The moment I did that, out of the game.
Yes.
Because I showed him up.
That was the only time though, huh?
Yeah.
Someone was telling me a story about Walker Cooper getting thrown out of a ball game when he was a young rookie. The umpire called a pitch that I guess Walker thought was
obviously a ball or something, maybe a strike.
And he turned around and looked at the umpire. He didn't even say anything.
Yeah.
The umpire said to him, he said, turn your head around toward the pitcher. He said, tomorrow you'll be back in the Bush Leagues. So Cooper says, you keep calling like that, you'll be coming back with me.
That's a good one, yeah.
He got the heave. He was just a rookie.
That's a good one, yeah. He's a real nice person. Did you interview him at all over the years?
I don't know whether they have him on tape or not, but Wyatt, you asked about, he definitely was interviewed. I've only interviewed guys in this area.
Yeah,
Buddy
that.
Hassett, Jim Boughton,
uh-huh.
yourself. Bill Lorman, who used to pitch for the Giants and the Dodgers.
How about Bill Brank? Have you tried to contact him?
I think they may have him from a guy who
because of the
They may have him. And not only that, but he's probably been interviewed many, many times because of his of his experience with the Dodgers, particularly in 1951. Do you have a ball game that stands out as the most exciting game? Obviously, that three home run game and the triple play game must stand out in your mind. I'm thinking of a game like the 1947 World Series game when Lavagetto got that hit off.
It's tough to pinpoint one particular game.
But
that 47 series, that particular game, I was at bat four times.
Yeah.
And I hit the ball great twice. Henrik makes a great catch in right field on me, you know?
Yeah.
The one I hit, I knew was a base hit.
Yeah.
He jumps, he climbs the wall and makes the catch. The next time at bat, two out, hit the ball in left center field. Instinctively, boom, it's a base hit.
Yeah.
I'm running like hell, hit first base, I'm going to second base. I look up, all the Yankees are walking in. DiMaggio made a great catch on the third out. I said, what the hell's going on here?
Was this the 47 series?
Yeah, the one Bevins pitched.
Yeah. Was it that same game?
Same game.
Yeah. How about travel and road life? Did it bother you or have any effect on you?
Well, it just... Would you just accept that was his thing to do?
Part of the
we traveled
game.
By train, you know,
yeah.
and sleepers, and it was a fun thing actually. You know, you would travel at night mostly, and then pull into town between 8-10 in the morning, and the schedule was so set up where when you're traveling, you play the next night, not in the afternoon.
It was a great
that night, so you go back to your hotel, snooze for a couple of hours.
How about the equipment? You know, today when you watch some of these guys with these gloves, it look like peach baskets.
I know it. Isn't that something?
It's amazing. You know, you watch. Now I'm sure that a ball player like this guy, Ozzie, the Cardinal shortstop, Ozzie Smith. Ozzie Smith.
Yeah, it's Ozzie Smith.
He would be a great shortstop in any era. But the gloves...
He's the greatest ever,
but
fielding-wise.
But, you know, a guy like Marty Marion didn't have a glove like that, yeah. Yet he was a great shortstop.
It didn't matter. In my opinion...
Smith is really something else.
Since the first day of baseball.
Yeah.
I think. That's how I think about
in
it.
In terms of covering the ground, and don't forget he's playing on many of his home games on AstroTurf, too, yeah. Which is that much tougher. So I guess it balances
he's
out.
He's the greatest ever, believe me, defensively. I saw him make plays in World Series, and I'm sure he's duplicated many times during the season.
If you were had to select a team of, an all-star team, who would you put on first base, for argument's sake?
People I played against?
Yeah.
That would be Gil Hodges, I would think, right? Pee Wee at short, second base. Oh.
Would you rate Pee Wee over Ozzie Smith?
I'm
talking about the, an all-star.
Overall. Yeah, overall.
Yeah.
Oh, Ozzie Smith, I put him in.
You'd be safe on that one, I'm sure.
Yeah.
As a second baseman or third baseman, guys that impressed you with great ball.
Well, the reason why I'm leaning towards Billy Cox,
yeah.
I guess Brooks Robinson may have the edge on him, you know. Smith catching.
There were some great catchers in your time. Geez. I'd have to put Campy in there with
Yogi, right?
Huh?
Yogi?
And Yogi, certainly.
That's a tough question, though.
There were four catches that I saw play that I think will always be the outstanding. Mickey Cochran, and certainly Campanella and Yogi Berra rate as well.
Yeah.
Third base, I don't know. You got many great ones.
Yeah,
but you
what about Greg Nettles? He was a great third baseman.
No question about it. A tremendous hitter, too.
Yeah. Hey, is he with the Yankees anymore? I don't think so. Is he? He's with them last year.
No, he's with one of the California teams. I think the California.
San Diego.
It could be San Diego.
Because
yeah.
He lives out there.
Okay. I think he lives around Newport Beach. Outfielders are relatively easy. You can't get three better outfielders than Willie Mays, John DiMaggio, Stan Musial. I don't think. But there are other great ones. I mean Terry Moore.
Yeah, I played against him. You're right, Terry
Duke
Moore.
Snyder. But, for guys who could do it all, some guys might have been great.
How about Dom DiMaggio? He's a great
player,
right?
But, some fellas would be great hitters or great fielders. But the overall base running speed and know-how, it was a real privilege to have had a chance to see those players. I saw Babe Ruth play when I was a kid growing up.
Oh, you did, yeah?
But toward the end of his career, the 1933-34.
Well, was he with the Yankees then?
He was with the Yankees.
Was he still?
He was with the Yankees when I saw him. And I saw him, I saw my first ball game in 1926. But I never saw Ruth play till about 1930-31. They play a series in Brooklyn on weekends before the season start. The Yankees would come over to Brooklyn. Or the Dodgers would play
spring training, right?
Game. Yeah, it was an exhibition. Yeah,
we did that when I played with the Dodgers. In 47, the series went seven games, and we lost, of course. In 1948, the Dodgers, the Yankees played at Ebbets Field, and we played in the Yankee Stadium before the season opened.
Yeah.
We had 67,000 people. God's honest truth. At that exhibition game at the Yankee Stadium. It was a beautiful day like today.
No, they had a tradition of playing, the Dodgers would play the Yankees.
Yeah, right. Imagine 67,000 people? Unbelievable.
And the stadium could hold them in that.
It was over 70,000 it would hold, the old stadium.
Yeah. Well, that was I remember some of those games, the early 30s. And the fans had come out. It was their first taste of baseball for the season.
You're almost finished. We'll have a cup of coffee.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about your second wife. You mentioned her name is Carol.
Carol.
Did you meet her down here?
I lived in an apartment house in the North Plainfield, high rise.
Yeah.
And
that was the last address they had for you.
Washington
Avenue.
So
I've corrected that.
Yeah. And it was a high rise. Her mother got sick, so they sold the house. They wanted to move to smaller quarters. And her parents decided to live in this apartment house. And Carol was in Boston, working there. And she was transferred to Jersey to work in New Jersey. So she lived with her parents. And I see this chick in a white uniform walking in and out. And I go, I watched her hours, you know. She's a nurse. She came in like 4:30, 5 o'clock. So I was in sales. It didn't matter what time, you know. I pull in 4:30, start reading the paper, wait for her to pull in, and you know, chat with her, open the door for her, and all that stuff. And one thing led to another. Yeah. Found out she wasn't married. She lived with her parents.
Yeah.
And invited her to lunch, you know, all that stuff. And I caught her for about a year, year and a half, and we got married.
Oh, that's great.
And I used to convince her. I still convince her.
Did she know? Did she have any interest in baseball?
Her father was a hell of a fan.
Yeah.
He was shocked when he found out that I used to play the Dodgers. He really was a real nice guy. He was a real baseball nut. She was like that about baseball.
Gene, I'm going to ask you.
I've been looking for months. Finally got one. Pulling Saturday.
This is Larry Yaffa again. I'm getting the full treatment here, sitting with Gene and having a cup of coffee in the.
Sounds very fresh coffee.
In the hospitality room here in his condo at Middlesex.
That's it.
And still rehashing the old baseball stories. Do you still go to the card shows and...
Listen, you know, we make a couple of bucks.
Oh, sure.
It's fantastic, you know.
Well, they don't. You don't charge by
no,
card.
No, the promoter does that.
The promoter does that. That's what I was going to say. But they give you a flat fee.
There's a misconception. It's like Joe DiMaggio, Mickey Mantle charge you $25. They don't do that. It's the promoter. They get a flat fee,
$5,000,
$8,000. Yeah. You know, that's a lot of dough.
Sure it is.
For 2 hours?
Absolutely. It's amazing how, you know, people value the autographs today.
It astounds me. Here I am out of baseball, 40 years.
Yeah.
They invite me to shows and they pay me, and people want my autograph.
And I'm not putting you in this category, but there's a lot of guys who were never really outstanding major league ball players, but were on teams that were famous teams.
Yeah.
And if somebody's collecting autographs of the entire team, they want every player on the team. I have a friend of mine who played for the Cardinals briefly in the 40s by the name of George Fallon. He was an infielder.
I remember the
name.
He
was a reserve infielder. And George was not a factor on the teams he played on in terms of historic games, but he gets letters all the time for his autograph because he was a member of the Cardinals in the 40s.
Well, you know, over 90% of the ball players are journeymen like myself.
Yeah.
We always wanted to be outstanding.
Yeah.
And my idol was Stan Musial. If I could hit like that, I said, "My, what a player!" You know.
Yeah.
I try to pattern myself. In fact, in batting practice, there's many times I try to imitate his stance.
Isn't it amazing with that stance?
Yeah. This is easy, right?
The thing that amazed me with Musial is he put on a performance against the New York Giants on a Sunday in a doubleheader, hit 5 home runs.
I'm reading about
unbelievable. And coming out of the ballpark, his son was waiting for him, Richard. And the kid said, "Daddy," said, "I must have been just laying it right down the middle for you." Stan said that was the ultimate insult.
What a player. Remember the guy Dusak, D-U-S-A-K?
Forsak Dusak, they used to call him.
Irv Dusak.
Yeah, Irv Dusak.
You know, they were both in Rochester, International League.
Yeah.
And Irv Dusak was considered the better prospect.
Oh, is that right?
Yep. At that time.
But when he came up, he had hit a couple of important home runs to win key games as a rookie. And they called him Forsak Dusak.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. Just briefly, of course, that was one of the announcers came up with that one. Of all the ballparks you played in, did you have a favorite other than Ebbets Field?
I liked the Sportsman Park.
Nice right field fence there.
Yeah. Chicago was a good one. Especially with the wind blowing me out.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. Pittsburgh, so-and-so.
Pittsburgh was very big.
Huge. I hit the ball pretty good in Cincinnati. Like I say, you know, you always want to excel and do real well.
Well, Cincinnati was a very deep right field, though. If you did well at Cincinnati, you were hitting it to left center.
Well, that was a line drive. Yeah. I was not a home run hitter, you know.
That's true. I remember that, yeah.
And, you know, Cincinnati, the left field had that...
Of that terrace.
Mound.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it took you a while to get used to it.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
That was unbelievable. That should have been illegal or something, right?
Today, yeah, that was one of the key features of that ballpark. They were playing ball there all the way back to the 1800s when Cincinnati first...
Crosley Field, right?
It wasn't Crosley then.
Was it?
It was right on that site. The field changed around... you know, like home plate is probably at a different place.
Oh, is that right?
When you played there, than it was when the field was first opened. Because Cincinnati had teams in other leagues, you know, which even before they played Major League Baseball there. They had a park called Palace of the Fans there, which was in...
How'd you know this? Did you read about it?
Yeah, sure. You know, there's some great books on old ballparks today. And this Sabre, this organization which I belong to and which... This is going to the tapes that we're making. They research all of the old ballparks, all of the old history, and as many of the old ball players as they can. And it's a lot of fun. We do it because we enjoy it.
Yeah, that's good. It is nice. But you know, of all the sports in this country, baseball is fascinating. People go for the records, you know, when it comes to basketball, hockey, or...
The thing is that we play it from the time we're small children.
Everybody's involved in it. Yeah. You're right.
And
you're right.
The only sad thing in my mind is the decline of interest in the smaller communities. You know, in the old days, every town had a baseball team.
That's right. You're talking about even the semi-pro clubs and the minor league?
A lot of semi-pro ball that was played. You know, neighboring towns would play one another. Rivalries would crop up. But with the advent of television... As good as it is, and as much as it's meant to the game, it just about, you know, took all of that old-time rivalry theme out of the game, you know, amongst these small communities in the Midwest and the far west.
Well, it changed. You know, the kids, people that were kids, 10 years ago, are not as interested. That was the thing. It was like passed from generation to generation.
There was a lot of distraction today, and kids are involved in other things. But, you know, when you were growing up, when I was growing up, we didn't have time to do some of the things that the kids...
There's no money, no cars, no nothing. That's right.
You know, but you never felt deprived because of that. You know, it was fun to get home after school, throw your books on the bed,
and go out and play ball.
Grab your glove and go out and play ball.
Yeah, catch them just...
We didn't hang out in candy stores and look on the courts. I appreciate you giving me the time, and I know that they'll appreciate getting this tape because.
Everyone's interested. Every guy you interview is interested, right?
Oh, absolutely.
That's a good idea, you know, because you would never get this. We were relaxing, we're talking. And
At first, well, you might say, you know, be a little reluctant. You know, they're concerned about trying to remember things and everything, but the minute. They do what you did downstairs, lean back on the couch, it all starts to come out, and it comes out very easily. I just bet there's a lot of information that I wasn't able to, you know, get from you.
By telephone, you wouldn't know. You're right. No, you're right. You know, I'm invited to these celebrity golf tournaments, some charity thing. I must hit 20, 25 a year. I went to one yesterday.
Uh-huh.
There's one Monday.
Uh-huh. Where's the one Monday?
Monday's up in the Westchester Country Club. Uh-huh. And 2 weeks from...
Well, you must see Branca up there.
Yeah.
Sure. Sally Mars.
Yeah, I see those guys,
And
there's one that Rizzuto's having, one at 28th, I think. Uh-huh. The 28th of this month.
Do you hear Phil on the Yankee telecast sometimes?
Oh, he's silly.
He and Seaver, they're quite a team.
Phil and I worked in the American Shops, a clothing store here in Newark, for many, many years.
Is that right? Yeah.
Sure, I'll tell you how I got the job. It was after the 47 World Series, and I just happened to be at Broad Market Street in Newark, and I was aware of this clothing store. They'd have these elaborate suits in a window on them, and those mannequins, you know. And it was eye-catching. I look around, I look, and I said, who do I see as Rizzuto? I said, what in the hell are you doing here? He said, I'm working here. He said, introduced to the owner, you know.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'm looking for a suit. I said, I want Rizzuto to sell it to me.
Yeah.
So he walked over, but he had one of the salesmen get the suits out. And I finally bought a suit. I started chatting with the owner, Max Strelson. And lo and behold,
gave you a job.
I got a job and I got the suit for free.
That's great.
Only because Rizzuto was in there.
Yeah.
And
a lot of people don't know about Rizzuto, is that he played football in high school.
I don't know about that either.
He's a small guy, but he played football. As little as he was.
Yeah.
And Phil, you know, when he was with the Newark Bears, he was just coming up to the Yankees. He was invited to some kind of a dinner, you know, in Newark as a guest at some charity occasion, and he met his future wife there.
Oh, Clara.
Yeah, she's the daughter of a Newark fire chief, and they have quite a family, and got together and got married.
What the hell did he fool her? She's an attractive lady.
Yeah,
I'll tell
you. A very lovely looking girl.
Good looking chick. I should tell her. How did you fool her? Jeez, come on. I'll get a little something.
Some kind of shortstop, though, huh?
Yeah. Oh, he deserves a Hall of Fame. Well, yeah, so, I'm not knocking Pee Wee, but I put him in the same level. Now, if Pee Wee makes it, he should make it.
Phil told a story on the air recently about his going in to see, I guess it was Ed Barrow, when he first came up to Kansas City, but a contract. He said, Barrow offered him something like $3,000 or $3,500. And he said, but Mr. Barrow, he said, I made the all-star team at Kansas City, the American Association. He said, sign that piece of paper and get out of here.
That's about it. That's about it. You're right.
Now, you got the plaque downstairs of Warner Branch Rickey's statements.
Oh, was that something? Did you read that?
Yes, I think it's very profound and very interesting. Was Rickey something of an inspiration for you?
He was a great speaker.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, he's like a Billy Graham, you know? He's tucking his hair, take his glasses off, and chalk his hand in the glasses, and he enunciate everything. And you go, you're tight. He had full control of you.
They told some
a
great...
fantastic speaker, I'm telling you.
The Cardinals, some of the newspaper guys that travel with the Cardinals tell some great stories about Rickey's speeches. When the Cardinals first won one of their pennants and championships, he held a meeting in the clubhouse with his players. This is probably in the 30s. And he says, you know what I admire most about you men? He says, your love of the game, your enthusiasm for the game. He says, you play it for nothing. He said, Pepper Martin says, thanks to you, we are.
Oh.
He had another one, another great story about him. It was when the Cardinals were working out down in St. Petersburg. The Yankees were in St. Pete. And it bothered Pepper Martin that they had to work out twice a day. The Yankees only worked out once a day.
Uh-huh.
You know, Martin could... If they worked out once a day, Martin could have been playing golf or driven a
fish
race car.
Like
so Rickey said to him, he said, my son, he said, you've got to understand, he said, these Yankees are world champions. He said, that's why they can work out once a day. We have to work out twice a day because we're not world champions. We've got to work twice as hard. So Martin says, Mr. Rickey, he says, I have a mule I used on my farm in Oklahoma. He said, I worked it from sun up to sundown. He says, and he ain't never going to run in the Kentucky Derby.
That's a good one. I like that one. Oh, let me make this phone call.
Sure, go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm going to get going.
All right. 1, 2, 1.
At this point, Gene Hermansky has other activities that he's got to take care of, and I'm going to close the interview. On September 15th, 1942, Middlesex, New Jersey, Larry Yaffa signing off.